risk tolerance, great for knowledge, poor anything for investing, investment strategies, investment decisions. Risk propensity, very important for understanding how to set up your protections, your stop loss limits, your hedging with options or currency hedging, adding bonds, whatever you want to do to kind of align your downside risk or how much loss you can take based on your emotional response to it. And then the third one is like the real practical bit that nobody ever talks about. And risk capacity is that third one. And this is how much risk you can actually monetarily afford to take. Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing. And most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. This is it. This is episode 20. I am a little bit surprised, one, that we made it this far, and two, how quickly we got here. That means for 20 weeks, we've been recording a podcast episode and, you know, doing minor, you know, edits to it and then uploading it and getting it published out there. And we have it on our website at militarywealthcoach.com/podcasts. We have it on Apple Podcasts. You just search for Service and Wealth, and that'll show up on Apple Podcasts. Same on Spotify. You can get it there and on YouTube as well. So we've got that's a new feature YouTube has. If you've been with us from the start, or if you've gone back and listened to some of the first episodes, there's one even when I was like, this is it. This is our first episode where I'm live. It's a video podcast, so now you can watch it. And then you're like, well, there's no video. And after that, I pledged to stay lo-fi because the reason why there's no video is I couldn't figure it out. So that task is yet to be completed because I did have the goal of doing video podcasts. But at the same time, like maybe that would just make me more anxious if I was videotaping or I'd get distracted. I'm like, what? Why does he look like that when he's talking? So maybe it's for the better that we just stick with the audio for the time being. And besides, like I don't feel like a lot of people actually go to YouTube for podcasts anyway. Who knows? We'll find out. But it is our 20th episode. You know, Apple sent like an email to us after our 12th episode, or maybe it was our 9th, and said, congratulations, you've already recorded and published more episodes than like 80% of podcasters. Well, I don't know if I'm just, you know, being thick-headed or if this is like true persistence, but, you know, I continue to keep my sights set on this goal of building this community where we have thousands of people who listen each week and we get the financial education out there to everybody in uniform. We've got over 2 million people who put on the uniform either every day or once a month and 2 weeks a year. Plus, we've got millions of veterans out there, too. And so as we continue to carve out and kind of blast through the mountain of financial wisdom and knowledge and education, you know, we're just going to keep moving. And for those of you listening, like you're a big part of the movement, you're in at the ground floor, you know, in from the start, stood on the yellow footprints and went through the process. And, you know, I really appreciate it. I hope you continue to find value if you're more new to the community, as in you only listened to the last couple episodes, please go back and listen to all of our episodes. We've got a ton of content. We talk about blended retirement system. We talk about thrift savings plan. We talk about survivor benefit program. What else have we talked about? We did a 4-part series on like just understanding like the mindset and the tactics, techniques, and procedures, or TTPs, for investing, and how you can successfully manage your own investments for retirement and for anything before retirement. doing the same things that the bots do at all the big brokerages. And you don't have to pay them an extra 1%, which over the course of 40 years of investing, the average person will spend over $400,000 of their savings in commissions paid to wealth managers and financial advisors and retirement planners to do what you can do for yourself, right? So when you join our community, when you listen to the content, when you follow along and tune in each week to the Service and Wealth podcast, we're literally giving you the information that can save you $400,000 in your lifetime. And I think that's a pretty good value-added proposition, you know? And so here in week 20, we're continuing to talk about like muscle memory and the mindset that goes with managing your finances, saving and investing, et cetera, and understanding who you are, right? Because the truth is that as much knowledge as you have, as much strategizing as you can do, as much studying, as much learning, you can put in hundreds and hundreds of hours into learning about stock investing, real estate investing, et cetera. If you have deep-seated beliefs and emotions that you're not paying attention to, that you're not registering or trying to like have an inner, you know, dialogue in your head with, you're not going to be able to come out and succeed and reach your goals because they're always going to hold you back. Now, one of the things here with the 20th episode that I wanted to kind of take note on is, you know, sometimes I got to tell like a, it's not even really war stories, right? They're more like staff puke stories, because most of an officer's career is some form of staff pukeism. And one of the things I did during COVID is when all the big universities were like, oh man, we can't have students in the classroom. We have to do like decentralized learning, remote learning. And then they thought, whoa, we can actually make more money if we do this remote learning thing for people who aren't enrolled at our university. And so they started to offer tons of you know, nationwide, hundreds of universities offering tons of fully remote, like totally virtual courses that you could pay them and then take. And so I used tuition assistance, you know, it's like a, at this point, like a salty, crusty major. I'm like, yeah, tuition assistance, sweet, right? Like, yes, you should use it. It's a benefit. Take advantage. We have a podcast and a blog post that talk about tuition assistance and how to maximize the value of it and when you should do it during your career, which is totally different for officer enlisted. But, you know, I took advantage of that, and I got an executive certificate in applied project management from Villanova University. You don't have to care about what that means or anything. But what I did is that, you know, I came back into my staff job on a 3-star Marine Corps staff, and I was like, I'm going to use this. All this stuff makes sense. And so, you know, I was like, hey, each year in January and July, we should dedicate 2 weeks to reviewing like all of our policies and plans, making minor updates, and then we put it to bed and we leave it, because in the intervening 6 months, like, there's not a lot that's going to change. You know, my boss was like, you're smoking crack. I was like, what do you mean? What, I am smoking crack? He's like, no, like we're not just going to do that. We're going to constantly review everything. All right. Just remember, everything is a priority. Everything, we're constantly, you know? And so like here I was trying to use project management to say like, okay, let's put all our brains together for like 1 week, the second week of January, and we will just like knock out 100 different tasks on this paper or this plan. We'll make the edits, then we'll staff it. It'll go around. Everybody will review it. We'll get it back in like a month, get a signature, put it out there, and then we'll come back in 6 months and we'll look at it again. And instead, and then, you know, then we move on. Then we can do other projects. We can plan exercises. We can do partnered events, like all this other stuff, deployments, whatever. But no, it didn't work. At least not, you know, not up and out. You know, we still spent like 1.5 days every 3 weeks on that. And then we like would come back a week later and like undo it and scrap it and then redo it. And you're like, wow, you know, we literally over the course of 6 months have wasted 2 to 3 weeks doing something we could have done in 1 week if we had just used some TTPs from Applied Project Management. Well, there's, I guess, a bit too much of a culture shock there with the military, you know, where we just kind of run around with our heads cut off, and people who are supposed to be our senior managers and mid managers are actually complete amateurs and don't know anything about managing. And it's unfortunate. And that's why we all feel like we're part of a goat rodeo, right? But now that I have some control over my life, and the Military Wealth Coach being a big part of that right now, is I can do project management with the Military Wealth Coach. And so I'm just batch recording podcasts on a random Tuesday. And then I'm going to schedule them and send them out and take the next 2 or 3 weeks to go work on something else. And then I'll come back and do it again. And so I think the only risk of that is that by not repeating something every week, I end up making the same mistakes and, you know, month after month and week after week, because I like, just when I think I got it, I won't. But all that is to say that while the information is fresh and we're talking about this topic on money scripts and your sort of like emotions and beliefs about money, it's worth to keep that vein going and to keep talking about it. And that's what we're going to do today. So first things first is before we jump into the new topic, what we'll do is say, hey, please, already kind of plugged it, but head on over to militarywealthcoach.com. Above the cut line, you can opt into our weekly newsletter. We'll send out links. You'll get our new podcast, new blog posts, and a weekly money tip delivered to your inbox every Monday. So you can start the week out. You have some good content to digest, think about, and motivate you to stick with your goals, your financial goals throughout the week. And then by the end of the week, you know, have a little fun. Enjoy your life. Enjoy your paycheck a little bit. And then come back and we'll reset every Monday and get your mind right and get back on the path towards financial freedom, building wealth, whatever your goals are. And of course, also on the website, you can find links to all of our social account, whether it's Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. We're on Pinterest. And, you know, since we are talking intermittently about budgeting, we do have an Etsy shop. It's MWC Store. So go to Etsy, type in MWC Store, and there's a bespoke, that means like custom made budget planner for military with specific categories for like all of your military benefits and TSPs and all that kind of stuff. So if you're at the process of building and adapting a budget to your life, we made one for you. And you can go in there and you can even, we've got like a video tutorial that you can watch from YouTube, see how you can use it. We've got a debt pay down calculator simulator on there, lots of cool features. And, you know, it's just an easy way to kind of like make the jump instead of trying to jump in Excel or Google Sheets and like create one yourself, which can get, you know, frustrating. Like, who wants to spend 6 hours trying to like create something to then keep track of your money when you can just spend a few bucks to get one for free? Also, we'll take the time right now to do our standard disclaimer where we say that the content of this show is educational in nature. All investing has risks that come with it. You need to make your own analysis, make your own decisions, do your own research. And once you made your decisions, own the consequences. And if you have, you know, any serious concerns about moving ahead by yourself, like go find a professional, pay somebody to coach you through it or to just do it for you. All right. So what are we talking about with this whole money scripts thing? In case you missed it, what we're talking about is that the crazy thing is when you're 6 or 7 years old and up until you're about 15 or 16, but at the peak, like 6, 7, 8 years old, you're subconsciously being imprinted by the people around you and the events around you on what to believe about money. But no 6 or 7 year old is actually really thinking about it. Well, Warren Buffett had like a paper route and two lemonade stands and like a pastry shop that he was running when he was eight or something, right? But he's an anomaly. The average 6, 7, 8 year old is not thinking about money. And so what does that mean? Well, that means that you grow up, and by the time you're in your late teens, your 20s, your 30s, 40s, 50s, going on all the way up to the end of your life, if you haven't done anything about it, the things you do with money, the way you think about money, the decisions you make are all emotionally driven by other people's experiences that you saw through the eyes of your seven-year-old self, right? And last week, I said, I don't like calling things fair or unfair. Like, that sounds kind of whiny to me, but I think, like, very black and white, it's, like, unfair that you might be making some huge mistakes financially, that you might be limiting yourself from achieving your goals, living your dream life, just because of something that you heard when you were 6 or 7 from, like, your parents or your grandparents or a neighbor, right? Like, that sucks. So if you want to reach your goals, you have to do more than just educate yourself, build a strategy, build a plan, automate your investments. You also have to, like, get in touch with your inner beliefs and your inner emotions about money. And, like, you got to do an information operations campaign, right? Like, the Army calls it, like, PSYOPs, and the Marine Corps and Navy call it, like, IO or IMO, whatever. Not IMO, but, you know, we've all got our own acronyms for it. But in your personal financial life, you've got to identify those emotions and beliefs you have that are blocking you from getting where you want to be. And then you've got to basically do, like, a counterinsurgency and get rid of them. So the example, an example that we gave last time was, I used kind of my own experience to show how when I was a kid, and, like, when I think back about what was going on in my family, in my household, when I was 6, 7, 8 years old, you know, my dad was gone, like, 16 hours a day doing construction, like, trying to make money. My mom was teaching, coming home at night, grading papers, doing all this extra work. We were buying our groceries at, like, a warehouse, discount warehouse. We would go one or two, you know, restaurant meals at Pizza Hut every month. You know, by the time I got into high school, things were going better. But, like, I definitely just remember, you know, one of the things I also really do remember was in the winters when it got really cold, my dad would get, like, plastic sheeting and drop cloth, and he would shut off part of our house because that way we didn't have to try to find the money to, like, heat that part of the house, right? And then a few weeks every winter, we'd all sleep in the office or the living room, right? And, like, it's just kind of created for me this idea of money scarcity and that you never can have enough. And that makes me someone who's money vigilant. That's my money script. The other three are money avoidant, money status, money worship. But I was money vigilant. And so even today, you know, like, right, when you're a senior officer and you're making 6 figures, plus you're getting, like, fat BAH check, plus my wife was working and getting a nice salary. Like, we were doing just fine, but we were still afraid to spend money. We were still saving. And, you know, even to this day, like, we're, you know, our daughter will say, like, oh, can we please go to the arcade? And we're like, we don't have money for that, right? So that's the money script for me. Well, why am I bringing all this back up? Well, it's not just the way that you feel, but it's the actions that you take with your savings, with your money, with your investments that are driven by these emotions. And today what we're going to talk about is two things specifically. We're going to talk about risk, and then we're going to talk about, like, control or, like, belief in your ability to change. So we're going to talk about, I want to address that second topic first because it seems like a little bit abstract and the terminology can get a little academic. So I'm just going to say it, but don't, like, feel like, you know, you got to nerd out and know this stuff or remember it for a quiz. But essentially people fall in two categories when it comes to how they feel about the world around them. You can either have what's called an internal locus of control, or you have an external locus of control. Put it in different terms. Somebody who has an internal locus of control means that within them they believe they have the ability to achieve their goals, to make changes in their life, to do good things. Somebody with an external locus of control, you might call like a victim mentality, they tend to believe that like the world is just kind of like dictated to them and they're just kind of like getting pushed around. Now you can try to turn that into like a spiritual topic and be like, do we have free will? Does man not have free will? Like get all philosophical, and I'm not here to do that. Just merely to say that you have to know yourself, right? And like have a real serious conversation with yourself and like think about events in the past. You know, maybe let's take, for example, like a promotion. And let's say you did not get the promotion when you expected to. Like you thought, okay, I'm coming up on 4 years. And like everybody either pins on 03 or pins on, you know, E4 by the time they hit 4 years. But you don't get that promotion. What was your reaction? Were you like, I got screwed? I did everything right. I got screwed. Or was it, you know what? I need to go back. I need to work harder on my fitness so I can improve my fitness scores. I need to do some more professional military education, do some online classes, or I was behind. Maybe I need to, you know, improve my martial arts qualifications. Maybe I need to go get my command to like send me off to a course so I can get like some other qualifications that make me better in my specialty and my job. Right? Those are two different people. The person who sits around and is like, oh, I got screwed. They have an external locus of control. They don't think it's their fault. And they don't think, or they don't believe necessarily that they can do anything to change it. Somebody with an internal locus of control actually thinks like, oh, I'm going to go make the world a better place for myself, for my family, and for my finances. Now, I genuinely believe if you're in the military, more likely than not, you have that internal locus of control and you believe that you can take charge and you can do good things to work towards your dreams and your goals in your life and financially. So let's tie that back into these money scripts and the beliefs and emotions you have about money. Let's say that you are somebody who, like me, you started investing at maybe like the wrong time. Let's say that you joined the military and started getting your first paychecks in like right around COVID time, and you were witnessing the crypto, you know, the crypto boom and Bitcoin and Ethereum and Doge and Shiba and like all those cryptos going up, up, up. And you jumped in, you took like your first paychecks, like you started putting $100 here, $500 there, then you got like an enlistment bonus or like a certain occupational field bonus, you know, like a sub bonus in the Navy or aviation, you know, you became a whatever in the Air Force. I should know more about the Air Force. I'm literally surrounded by the Air Force where I am right now. So I apologize. I will do better. But you get that bonus and you put a bunch into cryptocurrency and then crypto winter hits and like you get rocked and you lose like 3/4 of what you invested. Well, depending on your money script, you might either be tempted to sell and never come back in, or potentially you sell at the time and then you buy back high and you like repeat the same mistake. And then when Bitcoin comes up to 75 and then it goes back down to 50 and you sell again, you're like, not again. You repeat these same mistakes. These are things that on the one level are triggered by your emotions and your traumas, like your losses, whatever, your financial flashpoints is a term that's used. And the irony is that you don't learn the right lessons from them. And the double irony is that no matter how much you think you are in control, you're acting like the victim. And so it's important to not just understand, and in you know, our last episode, our 19th episode on money scripts, outlined the four different scripts and talked about the characteristics of the person, like how and like what the pitfalls or the dangers are, like what your most damaging money belief or habit is if you fall in one of those four scripts, and then like what you can do like some just one or two mindset or actionable steps you can take to start to reverse that. But you also have to pay attention to, like, do you know yourself? Are you a person who believes that you're in control, or do you have that victim mentality? Because it doesn't matter, you know, if you think, like, if you imprinted off your crypto winter experience that you, crypto is risky and you can lose a lot of money. And then you repeat the same mistake in, you know, early 2024, buying at the all-time high and then selling after the, what would that have been, 30 to 40%, maybe 50% correction, right? You were acting like someone with an external locus of control. So that's a really dangerous combination. And somebody with an internal locus of control will do the following. They would look back and they'd say, man, I had this financial flashpoint with crypto winter in which I lost 75% of my investment and I sold. I can take control of my investments and not let that happen again. I'm going to invest again now. I'm not going to throw all my money in. I'm going to invest consistent, affordable amounts, like $200 per paid period. So $200 every on the 1st and the 15th is going to go in. I'm not just going to go all in on, like, pardon my language, but a shit coin, right? Like, I'm going to invest some in Bitcoin, which I read the white paper. It's only 8 pages, but so I understand what it's about and I believe in it. And I'm going to invest some in, like, a speculative coin or cryptocurrency. But I also have other money that I'm saving for retirement. I have other money that's in a high-yield savings account for a future car upgrade or new home purchase with a VA loan. So I'm diversifying. And then I'm going to put in either alerts or automatic sell signals, what are called like stop loss limit orders, so that if Bitcoin goes up to 100, I have this, you know, 20% downside sell, because that's like what I feel comfortable with. And if it goes down 20,000 to 80, well, it will sell. And then I will start being diligent and I will look to reinvest once it looks like the crash is over. Or maybe I'll just ride it out. But I'm not going to sell at the bottom. I'm not going to panic sell when it goes down by half and lock in my losses. So that's somebody who's using this belief that they are in control of their financial decisions and their financial future, overcoming their emotions and these traumas that they have from past investments. Just sharing my, you know, my personal journey and my flashpoints were, you know, as I outlined in the last episode, you know, I lost like 99% of my savings and my investment portfolio in the dot-com bubble back in 99, in early 2000. And then what did I do is, what was it, eight or nine years later? Like, I didn't invest at all for like 6 or 7 years. I was terrified of the market. I thought, like, there's no way the stock market's a scam. I finally got back in. We had the housing bubble and then the financial crisis and the Great Recession. And like, I sold at a loss again. And like, I stayed on the sidelines. I took all my money in cash again. And I missed the rebound. I was still somebody who was I was money vigilant script. I was like, you know, I can never have enough savings. I can't afford to risk all this loss. And I was also operating with a victim mindset that like the market was just going to dictate and I had to sit and take it. Well, fool me once, fool me twice, don't fool me a third time. I finally learned how to take back control and have that internal locus of control from that second financial flashpoint or crisis or trauma. And so did not wait as long to get back in. And ever since then, you know, for the past over a decade, through all the ups and downs, have not stopped investing. Not 1 month, not one pay period. Right? Like through the bad, the good, bad, and the ugly of, yeah, I guess 11 years, 11 plus years, just stuck with the strategy, invested in the assets that I researched and knew historically, statistically were going to be, you know, profitable in the long run, invested every pay period. So that was smoothing out the ups and the downs. not panic selling, but putting in various protections, whether that's either the stop loss limits or options contracts in order to hedge downside, right? Taking back control and overcoming the emotions in the money script, as well as that sort of victim mentality of, oh, I got screwed, right? And so that's sort of like the big challenge. And you have to get over those things and you have to start becoming more confident and assertive and taking control of your finances. And we keep saying every, you know, whether it's a blog post, a podcast, a book, a course, we keep saying the single most important thing that you can do to reach your dream life and achieve your financial goals is to take control of your finances. And the foundation upon which that is built is education. There's some studies that showed like just 50 hours, right? Like one semester of a college course on personal finance, 50 hours worth of reading, studying personal finance translates to an extra $100,000 in net worth for the average person. And in our country, in which the average person has a net worth of about like $216,000 to $225,000, $100,000 is almost a 50% increase, right? Just from 50 hours of financial education. So that's why we're here. That's why the Military Wealth Coach exists. That's why you can get our book, Service and Wealth, on Amazon, either order paperback, which I think is really cool, or you can get the Kindle version. If anybody out there has got a great narrative voice, maybe we could partner up and you could turn it into an audiobook for me. I tried with AI, and that did not work very well. you know, for all the hype about AI, it's still got a ways to go, right? Which is probably a good reason to not think we're at the top for any of the AI stocks you might be investing. But anyway, you know, this is sort of like the lessons to share and the information out there and the community is to get you the education, give you the confidence, help you believe, even if you don't naturally feel that way, that you have the ability to have control, you have an internal locus of control, to rewrite your money scripts, to take control of your finances and put in a strategy and put in the work to achieve your goals. All right, enough said about that. I want to talk about some more real world bits and also risk, right? So that's sort of the last part that we really wanted to tackle here, talking about your emotions and your mindset about money and investing. And man, risk, right? Like how many of you have done an online quiz where it's like, and I think you can even do this on TSP. I personally, like I should know that, right? But like I don't really trust TSP because they still make and sell and manage the life cycle funds, which are the most embarrassingly bad investments you could possibly have in your retirement portfolio. So when they have other things like, let's assess your financial knowledge or let's, you know, take our quiz, I'm like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. But you can go out there and there's lots of other places that are actually, you know, resources that are actually quite reputable and informative and reliable. And you can probably, I should probably just make my own quiz, put it on the website, right? But you can basically take like, what is your risk tolerance? And that's, you're always going to see that before, you know, before investing, understand your risk tolerance, your appetite for risk, you know, in whatever form they're talking about, like how comfortable are you with risk? Because there's one truth about investing that is the more you want to earn in profit from an investment, the more risky it's got to be. If you can't handle risk, if you don't like risk, then you should be just investing in treasuries and T-bills, certificates of deposit, and high-yield savings accounts. You're going to get, depending on what the federal funds rate is, you know, you'll get anywhere from like 1.5% up to maybe like 5.5% or 6% at any given time. Your money will grow along with inflation, but, you know, all that does is, it's not making you rich, but at least you're not going to be broke. Out to somebody who's super, you know, they love risk. They are like, I want to be a millionaire overnight. Right. And they're not even going to invest in the stock market. They're just going to go to the casino and put it all on black and let it ride. Right. Because they're hoping to be overnight millionaires. And that's generally where the conversation stops when it comes to investing. And in my classroom, I used to give out a quiz. I can't remember if it was from like Bankrate or NerdWallet or Motley Fool or anything. But my students would take the quiz, answer questions, and it would give them their risk aversion or their risk tolerance or their appetite for risk, and kind of line them up with like what an optimal investment, stock and bond investment portfolio was. Well, there's a problem with that. That is just how you feel on the inside. And the truth, and we've talked about it before, if you invest in a 100% stock portfolio, you can average 10.8% per year over 20 to 30 year periods. You might have a minus 40% next year. That could happen. But 20 years from now, you'll look back and you'll have averaged 11%. When you start telling yourself, oh, I'm not comfortable with that level of risk, and you start adding bonds or cash, you start pulling down your annual return from 10.8 to 10.2 to 9.2 to 8.5 to 7.6 to 6.4, all the way down. Eventually, if you're just 100% bond person, you're going to be in like the 4.5% range. And so the problem is that in the long run, you're way worse off. You're going to have like a third of the retirement savings if you're 100% in bonds that you would have if you were 100% in stocks over 30 years. It's a difference between having, 1.2 and 3.5 million. It's a difference between having, when you want to retire in your 60s, having $40,000 a year or $140,000 a year from your TSP. Like these are huge, significant things. And the statistics and the history tells us that bonds can also go down, right? You can also lose a lot of money with bonds. You can lose a lot of money with cash. If you're just in cash, you're for sure going to lose 3.1% per year because of inflation. So the data tells us that, like, so long as you're in your 20s, 30s, or 40s, and even maybe your 50s, like, you should probably be 100% in, like, risky assets like stocks and real estate. And it should not be until you're in the last 3 or 4 years before you're actually going to retire that you start moving money into cash or bonds or more low-risk assets so that part of your savings can be protected from loss to get you through the next 5 or 6 years while your other investment's still in stocks and recovers and gets back up in the rebound after a crash or correction. So risk tolerance, all it is it should not dictate what you're actually mixing in your portfolio. It's just telling you how you're going to feel about it. If you're very risk averse, don't make the mistake of letting that guide you into a bond heavy portfolio or putting all your TSP savings in the life cycle fund. You're probably somebody who should go pay a professional advisor to manage your money for you. Why do I say that? Well, the math is simple. If you're super risk averse, and let's say you're like, I want an 80% bond portfolio, because a little stocks is nice, but I'm super scared of, the next COVID crash or the dot-com bubble bursting. And so you're going to get, an inflation-adjusted 5.35% per year. If you were 100% stocks, you would be getting 10.8% inflation-adjusted. That's twice as much. Now, that professional financial advisor might charge you like 1 to 1.2% to manage your money. So now you're only getting like 9.5%, but you're still getting 4% higher returns every year than if you allowed your fearful self to do it, right? But all that is to say, like, risk tolerance, it's just measuring your feelings, and it should not drive investment decisions. You've got to research the returns that you can get and make those decisions based on the numbers. But that's only one part of the risk equation. And this is why emotions are so tough in the process of investing and building wealth, because there's also what's called a risk propensity. Okay. Again, that's maybe like an SAT word. But propensity, what we're talking about here is your inclination or like your readiness or willingness or your instincts to act based on a thing. And it's not the same as risk tolerance. And I'll give you an example. I consider myself to be a very risk tolerant, almost risk seeking investor. So I invest in stocks. I think bonds are trash. Unless we get into some sort of crazy bond market in which bonds are going to be paying, you know, they're going to be yielding like 8, 9, 10% and rivaling stocks. Like, I don't want anything to do with them because stocks still outperform in the long run. And I'm investing for 10, 20, and 30 years in the future, not tomorrow. So, like, that's how I feel. And that's what I invest in. And then what happens? Dot-com bubble bursts, and I sell it all. I couldn't handle the loss. Then we have the housing bubble burst, and then the financial crisis back in 2008, and stocks fall off the cliff again, and I can't handle the loss, and I sell, right? My actual risk propensity was much lower than my risk tolerance, and that's probably true for most of you, especially in the military, right? Like, our culture not only has a pressure to spend, pressure to, like, get the latest drip, glow up, like, try to, like, fake some status. Like, I see a Lance Corporal driving a brand new, you know, Ford Mustang in the parking lot. And, like, what are they trying to do? They're trying to act and look like they're an E7, but they're just an E3. So that, like, that's already danger. But we also tend to believe that we're, like, you know, invulnerable, invincible, immortal, right? Like, whatever, you pick one, that's kind of what we tell ourselves in the military. And we're just naturally seeking risk. We ride motorcycles. We run towards the sound of the guns. We strap ourselves onto the top of, I don't know how many hundred thousands of pounds of jet thrust in like a fighter or like a C-17, right? And we're just like doing radical, badass stuff all the time, highly risky stuff. And so, you know, we generally, like, as a culture, have this affinity for risk. And so that can cause you to do things that are quite risky, like, you know, I'm not going to say I know, but I'm also not going to say I don't know several young Naval and Marine Corps officers who did this, but they went to the Naval Academy. They got their career starter loan. They got, like, $35,000. They took, like, $10,000. They put it in an IRA. They put $5,000 down on like a new car. And then they put like $20,000 into like Shiba Inu or like Tesla stock, right? They, you know, they're like, I like risk. I'm going to go invest in this stuff. It's going to be cool. I'm going to make a lot of money. And then what happens? The floor falls out. Tesla goes down 35% and they sell. They lock in a loss. They lock in a $7,000 loss in their brand new portfolio. Well, what that shows is your risk propensity or how you're going to react to risk. And that's way more important than how you think about risk in the beginning. Because if you notice yourself, like again, in my case, where two times in a row, I suffered a big loss, got scared and panic sold. And now I realized that I was saying I could handle a lot more risk than I could actually emotionally handle. So what do you have to do? Well, you're going to have to make some mistakes. Or you can educate yourself and learn how to protect yourself from those big losses. Put in stop loss limit orders on your stocks and your crypto. Short crypto trade options. Again, educate yourself. Don't go into that without the knowledge. And you have to read a lot to understand it. But that's what all the big investment banks, all the big I don't want to say all the big pension funds, but some big pension funds, high net worth, ultra high net worth investors, they all use those things to protect themselves from downside risk so they can go after the really lucrative like 10, 20, 30% returns that are highly risky, but then protect themselves and not suffer the massive loss. Because it's just human nature when you see your money going away to panic and sell. And then the only thing you've done is locked in your losses. So when you're at this point, you know, we've talked about risk tolerance and risk propensity, and there are some clear actions that you can do to overcome it. First, you can take a quiz to understand how you feel about risk, and then you can crumple it up and throw it out. And then you sit down and you can do it by yourself. You can go pay a financial advisor. You can come talk to me as a wealth coach, and we can write down what your long-term goals are. We can calculate the cost of them, and then we can automate, set up automation on your monthly or every paycheck deposits and investments. And then you just stick to a consistent strategy and you put in some protections, right? And then you stop worrying about it. Don't panic sell. Just let the system and the strategy work. And remember, you're investing for 10, 20, 30 years. You're not investing for next Tuesday. Who cares if the stock market goes down 8% next week? It'll come back. All right. There's one other kind of risk, though, that we want to cover, and it's really important. And especially when we go back talking about the, you know, the example I shared of these midshipmen at the time, you know, ensigns, second lieutenants now, but or maybe first lieutenants and JGs even, who I may or may not know. But that is a third element of risk, and it's called risk capacity. And this is the one that you do have to pay attention to, and you know, deliberately build into your strategy, right? Risk tolerance, great for knowledge, poor anything for investing, investment strategies, investment decisions. Risk propensity, very important for understanding how to set up your protections, your stop loss limits, your hedging with options or currency hedging, adding bonds, whatever you want to do to kind of align your downside risk or how much loss you can take based on your emotional response to it. And then the third one is like the real practical bit that nobody ever talks about. And risk capacity is that third one. And this is how much risk you can actually monetarily afford to take. What do I mean by that? Well, let's go back. We'll look at you know, 18-year-old me putting of my, you know, slightly less than $3,000 life savings, putting like $2,500 into an E-Trade account and starting to, you know, essentially swing trade tech stocks and small caps. That was 85% of my savings. And when I lost it all, that means I had like $500 left, okay? Which mean, you know, I ended up using credit cards. I bummed money off my parents to, you know, pay the bills and I took out loans, none of which was a smart decision. I had no emergency savings fund. So I did not have the risk capacity to even invest $2,500, let alone invest it in high-risk stocks. I should have invested $1,000. I should have kept $2,000 in a high-yield savings account for my emergency savings fund so that I could cover car repairs, that I could, you know, make sure I didn't have to go into debt on a credit card and things like that. Let's look at a student, a midshipman, or a cadet. You know, whether you're Air Force Academy, Coast Guard, Merchant Marine, West Point, Naval Academy, doesn't matter. If you're coming up through that system and you are eligible for a career starter loan, you know, and you can get $35,000, the first thing you should do is like $8,000 to $10,000 should go into a high-yield savings account as your emergency savings fund, right? If you don't do that, if you don't have savings, you don't have the capacity to take on risk of investing $20,000, $30,000 of that into a stock market. You could lose it all, or, you know, you could be doing great in returns, but you can't sell it. Like, you're investing for future wealth. You can't sell it to pay, you know, DTS, to pay your government charge card off. You can't sell it if your, you know, car gets vandalized while you're out in the field for 3 weeks. You have to have emergency savings. You have to have a reasonable amount of money going into retirement that you're not going to touch for 40 years. You have to have a reasonable amount of money going into your war chest or going into a brokerage account so that you can afford to become a homeowner and a real estate investor during your first 2 or 3 years in the military, right? You don't have the capacity to take on the risk of putting it all in on crypto and stocks. And this goes up, you know, your capacity. Basically, you have to look at your current financial situation. I invite you to head over to our blog, and, you know, we've got We've got a podcast as well on emergency savings fund, but in that blog, we talk about what the guidelines are based on not just your rank and income, but also your life situation. You know, like an E3 who's married and has a kid and, you know, has two cars, probably needs to have more emergency savings than like a single E6 who is just renting a room in between deployments from a buddy, right? That life is a lot more complicated, and there's a lot more people depending on you. You have a less risk capacity, okay? And so this is like the most real world thing that you got to think about. And it's the one, ironically, sadly, that never gets talked about in the investment world, but needs to be highlighted. So, you know, in conclusion, you know, to just wrap this up and the whole today's theme plus and topics plus like the whole sort of like, you know, going back to episode 13 and then 18, 19, and 20, talking about our money beliefs and our money stories and our feelings and like all that stuff that makes, you know, again, to quote Brad Klontz, the author of Psychology of Financial Planning, you know, he says the most important question you want to ask as a financial advisor, financial planner, coach, influencer, author is, why do smart people do stupid things with money? And it's because their emotions take over, because they have a victim mentality, because they don't understand their capacity to take on risk. They don't understand the propensity or their reaction to loss, like how they'll react to risk. They're just thinking about their risk tolerance. Oh, I don't mind. Yes, let's trade Ether on 10x margin. I know I could lose $50,000, but I'm fine with that because I can make 50. Really? What are you going to do if you lose $50,000? Can you even afford to? Do you believe that you have the financial IQ and the ability to control your finances, to protect yourself from those losses and go after the high profit, risky returns, right? It's a lot more complicated, but it all starts with financial education. And so at this point, you know, I can confidently say that if you read our book, Service and Wealth, if you listen to all 20 of our podcast episodes and you read all of our blog posts, I think we got more like 25 of those out at this point, you're going to get more than 50 hours worth of high quality financial education on budgeting, on investing, on financial planning, on retirement savings, on, you know, the emotions and psychology of investing and how to protect your investments, right? How to do it yourself. You know, on the podcast, what was that? It was episodes 6 through 9. We were talking about like the ABCs and the 1, 2, 3s of why investing works and how you can DIY your own investments. You know, we talked about tuition assistance. We talked about the military survivor benefit program. We did a 4 episodes on the blended retirement system and, you know, choosing what to do about continuation pay, what to do about like the lump sum option, you know, just covering all sorts of things that can help you save hundreds of thousands of dollars or, you know, increase your total wealth by hundreds of thousands of dollars over the next couple of decades. So I invite you to please dive into the content. And then, you know, I'm going to end with the same challenge I gave out last week's episode, which is find one person this week who, actually, no, two tasks, right? Two tasks. So the first one, wherever you listen to this, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube, please leave us a 5-star review so we can, you know, start tracking in the search algorithms. If you're listening to this on our website, just head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review anyway. Pick an episode, any episode, doesn't matter. And then the second task is this, whether it's this one or any other episode or any blog post we've done, or even the book, you know, if you've been one of those who's picked up the book and read the book and found value there, find one person in your life, in your unit, in your family to share it with and send them the link. You know, when we do that, just one person per week across the whole community, we're going to pull in, you know, just tons of new readership and grow our community pretty rapidly. And by this time next year, you know, hopefully we have thousands of people out there, in the military who are, following our content and learning and becoming capable to take control of their own finances, DIY their retirement planning, DIY their brokerage accounts, become real estate investors. You know, that's the next big thing that we got to get into here is talking about the VA loan and real estate investing. I've got a couple other ideas for podcasts I want to get it to before that. But then, you know, by the time we get into the winter holidays in November, we call it Marine Corps Ramadan because we have like not just Veterans Day and Thanksgiving, but the Marine Corps birthday. So we have like no work and just, right, like don't hate if you're on a joint staff or some sort of joint unit and you're wondering where the Marines went. Like we're just off getting drunk and celebrating our fake history. But through November and December, we're going to finally bite into that big juicy apple of the VA loan, real estate investing, and help you get smart on that so that you can go out and start to generate real life-changing, lifelong, and even generational wealth by using smart leveraging, by being a savvy buyer and seller, and knowing how to really add value and take profits with, even if you just buy one house every PCS and do that 5 or 6 times in a 20-year military career, there's no reason why you can't walk away with, you know, $500,000 to $1 million of extra wealth just from doing that. You don't even have to like have tenants, right? So anyway, thanks again for joining. Hopefully we got this one done a little bit quicker than last time. I always like to keep it around 45 or 50 minutes, but sometimes I talk too much. So if you have a problem with that, please reach out to me. Send me a DM on any of the socials. You can email me at coach@military-wealth.com. That's coach@military-wealth.com. Or just sign up for a free coaching session on the website, and you can tell it to my face over a Zoom or Google Meets call. All right, well, thanks again for tuning in. I look forward to hearing back on your progress with your task for the week, and let's continue to grow this community. Until next week, stay financially fit and mission ready.